Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to part two of The Guilty Feminist. So plug in and get ready for the fun. Hello, Brisbane. Are you ready for a little bit more Guilty Feminist? Then welcome back to the stage, Deborah Frances White and Steph Tisdall.
It's like musical chairs, that bit.
It is, isn't it?
How are you, Steph?
I'm confused.
Oh, there's various microphones here.
I'll use both.
Yeah.
No, which... Hold on. Hello? Hello? They're both...
Right. Excellent. Steph, this is a very important night for me because this is the first time I've ever played QPAC.
Yeah,
which,
cool.
If you're listening internationally, is the Queensland Performing Arts Centre. But this is where I used to come as a child when, you know, there was theatre on or something. We'd drive up from the Gold Coast. It was always a very big deal. You'd always dress up.
Yeah.
And then this is where we'd come on school trips.
Yes.
They'd put you all in a bus and they would take us to a restaurant called the Woolshed, which is probably not around anymore. Some people are laughing at that. And it had sort of like, it was meant to be like a shearing shed. It was like, sort of like once a jolly jumbuck camped by Billabong type feel.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Click, go the shears, boys. Click, click, click.
I feel like they're all racist. I don't know.
I mean... They may well be.
It just feels that way.
Yeah. If so, I'll stop with the I'll stop with the reminiscing over.
No.
But, you know, it wasn't until I left Australia and went to other countries that I realised that other countries did not celebrate their convict population.
Yeah.
Because all the songs we learnt as children at school were all like Turulai Adity. It was all Bound for Botany Bay. And there was so much celebration of...
Absolutely.
The criminal population of Australia. But I just assumed everywhere you went, there was like folklore about like Ned Kelly and, you know, it was a surprise to me that other countries were like, yeah, we don't talk about the prisoners as much. They're not the heroes. And listen, of course, that's all socioeconomic and who was being sent over here as convicts and, you know, all about, you know, also within that context of colonization. So I understand the intersectional implications of what I'm saying, and at the same time, it is a bit weird.
It is very strange. I actually, I'm really obsessed with propaganda.
Yeah? Tell me more.
Not like having a propaganda. What's that? No, like a...
Don't clap.
No, I'm just going to strike this microphone stand because it's meant to be struck, and it's in a weird place, so it looks like it's... So look, listen, in America, if you did this, the union would jump up and say, you're not allowed, but it's Australia and no one gives a fuck.
I'd get my dad to carry it. It's quite heavy. I've become really obsessed with propaganda because I started thinking about, like, you know, we always look back in history and we go, like... Oh, that was propaganda.
Mm.
But so now I'm like, are we being propagandized?
You know?
And I know that we are, but yeah. I keep on trying to find it.
Yeah, all the time. I think almost everything that's said is, you know, I mean, not everything. I don't want to become one of those paranoid people of like, you know, everything's fake news. But given the state of the climate crisis, clearly everything that industrialized government, you know, capitalist governments are telling us is... Put it off, it'll be fine.
Also, don't know if anybody else noticed this. I watched a series on Netflix or Stan called Welcome to Londongrad. It was all about Russians. There's a big push against Russians at the moment.
Also, is that so because Putin's, like, really illegally invading Ukraine?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, it's amped up. Like, I mean, I get it. I'm not, like... We need to stop the... Like, I get it. I know he's a villain. Like... But
I'm
also,
fascinated to see where this goes.
Well, I was just going to say, I should say that the reason that this links back to... Otherwise, this is just like, yeah, hear about them Russian. Like, that wasn't... this links back because I was going to say that I feel like a lot of those, you know, colonial songs...
Yeah.
...were propaganda. Like, it is celebrating... a prisoner background, something that, like, a convict history, something that would be hard to celebrate. I mean, it'd be great if there was an already established culture that was really beautiful here.
If only that had been the case. So after the Woolshed and all of its colonial implications... It was an important conversation. Then we used to come to QPAC and we'd see a show. And I've never played QPAC before. We've played, you know, the Powerhouse and other venues in Brisbane, but it's very exciting to be here.
It is great.
We're backstage and, you know, you go into the green room and it's all... You go into the green room and you're kind of just like, you know, there's cast from the Traviata having their fish and chips, but in full costume.
Yeah.
It's really excellent.
I think I've been here to see two shows. One was The Importance of Being Earnest. It's a good show. When I was a drama student... Me, drama. And weirdly, the other show that I saw was The Illusionists.
Oh.
I'm fucking obsessed with magicians.
Yeah, one of my friends was in The Illusionists. One of my really close friends, Philippa Scoffey.
Which one was he?
He's the comedy mind reader. And he and I used to live together at all the festivals, so I would see backstage to all the tricks. It's always disappointing. You never want to know. It's just so disappointing.
It is really weird, though, to say that I'm obsessed with magicians because I think, as a performer, obsessed. As people, oh, no.
You don't want to hang out with them. You
never,
just want to know how their tricks
like, are. Like, I literally can't think of anything worse.
What, than hanging out with a magician?
Yeah. Like, off duty, I'd be like, oh, my God, shut up. Like...
But they don't tell you anything. They won't. They'll never tell you anything.
Yeah, but just think about the... It's like if I knew somebody was a professional juggler, I'd be like, I don't think you've ever made a friend. Look, I'm a feminist, but I'm very judgmental.
Juggler-mental? Do we have any That's a lot more than that deserves. Any jugglers or magicians in? Just give us a cheer. No.
They wouldn't be out. No. They'd be at home practicing.
Well, listen, this discussion around QPAC and culture and what we might come here to see leads us into our guests, because one of our guests is the importer of the Women of the World Festival to Australia, and the other one is the first female CEO in the AFL. Can I ask you, what do you know about the AFL?
If you're talking about the Alpine Falcon Lodge. So much. It is quite well known that I do love my parrot. I'm obsessed with birds. I know nothing about AFL, I'll be totally honest. I know nothing.
You know nothing? So you can't explain the rules of AFL to me?
I could make them up. I could be convincing, but...
You could just make them up. Michael, do you know the rules of AFL? Michael's waving no, he doesn't know. No, all the men in this audience, it turns out, are saving the environment, working with disabled children...
That's amazing.
Raising the next generation. The men that are drawn to this show are pretty spectacular as men go. And it's really wonderful. It's a wonderful thing to see. But what it means is none of them can explain the rules of AFL, disappointingly. Is there an equivalent of the offside rule in football in Britain, which you call soccer, that men always want to explain the offside rule? And every single time, if I want a man... Basically, this is a true story, but if back in the day, if I wanted a man to fancy me... I'd just ask him, could you explain the offside rule to me? And then when he did, I'd just go, oh, my God, I've never understood it before. So many people have tried to explain it. So many men have tried to explain it to me, and I've just never got it. But I just understood it straight away that when you said it. And then they'd just be like, sleep with me now. It's a foolproof method.
I think AFL looks really messy. I feel like if you were high up enough in a plane, you'd be like, is that AIDS?
Okay, all right. We're going to learn about it tonight because although none of the men here can explain it to us, or some of them are dying now to go, we can. Is there any men who feel that they could?
Maybe any man?
Just, you don't have to. Just shout if you think you could. Can any women describe? Any women or non-binary people, could any of you describe it?
Hey.
Okay, interesting. Excellent, good. Any fans of AFL in? Any fans of the women's game in? Okay, all right. All right, it's time to bring our guests on then in that case. Our first guest today was the first female CEO to be appointed in the AFL by establishing the Brisbane Lions inaugural women's team who won their first premiership in 2021.
Hey!
She has created a full playing pathway for the women and girls of Queensland. This is like Ted Lasso, isn't it? With access to this elite high-performing environment, women are no longer forced to abandon a game they love due to lack of professional opportunity. Awarded the AFL Football Woman of the Year Award in 2018, Brianna's work is slowly dismantling age-old thinking around female representation in sport to create a more level, gender-balanced playing field. The daughter of a diplomat, she spent her early years growing up overseas, lucky enough to have lived in England, Greece, Pakistan, and Kenya. Her childhood helped shape her into an accidental feminist. Please welcome Brianna Brock! Come take a seat, Brianna. Thank you so much. Also joining us tonight, she is a cultural strategist and co-founder and director of consultancy company Positive Solutions. She's worked across Australia, Hong Kong, New Zealand, and the UK. She's also the exec director of Cultural Enterprise of One Mind, who are the producers of WOW! Women of the World Festivals in Australia in partnership with the Global WOW! Foundation. She is also an advisory board member of the foundation. WOW! Allows women and girls, boys and men, and non-binary people to imagine a gender-equal world through a cultural program of both celebration and interrogation of contemporary life. Put your hands together and make incredible guilty feminist welcoming noises for Cathy Hunt.
Hey!
Cathy, thank you so much. Come take a seat. All right, first things first. Brianna, what have you always loved AFL?
No, I would say no.
Do you love it now, though?
I love it now.
Because otherwise your CV is...
It's a bit false.
I just fell into it.
Well, I loved it from a different perspective because my dad was a football player, quite a good football player. Not professional, but made his way. And so, you know, my two other sisters love our dad. We idolise him. So we love watching him play and... You know, he watched football on the TV and he was sort of like half interested in it because he liked it, so you sort of liked it. And it wasn't until we finally moved to Brisbane and we started going to games at the Gabba. So think, oh, this game's pretty cool. And understood the rules a lot better. Didn't really know the rules. Didn't really think much of it. You know, it was just what you watched. But then a friend then said, do you three girls know that at my club there's all these chicks playing football, like a girls' team? And I was 25 at the time. So I'd been a professional tennis coach for 10 years before that. We're like, what, footy for girls? What are you talking about? So off we went and we just fell in love with it and haven't looked back, haven't dropped my tennis rackets and haven't ever really, don't even watch tennis anymore, to be honest. But that was it. My older sister's just turned 45 and she's still playing. After I had a baby, I sort of gave it away. But now I'm working in the industry and doing this job.
And what's the history of the women's game in this country? How long have girls and women been playing?
The first recorded games were like in 1916 or something like that. So over 100 years from when they very first played games. They were charity games in the war, you know, this women's sewing factory versus the cannery, and they'd go and play. But
so a bit like a league of one's own where in America the women played baseball because the men were at war.
Yeah, but getting like 20,000 people to games.
Oh, wow.
Because what a novelty to watch women in dresses play football. They are beautiful silk dresses with the bonnet and amazing.
See, I'm more interested now you offer me that costume option. I'd do it in a silk dress with a bonnet.
I have no idea how they played.
You're not with me on the bonnets and the silk dress. Come on, if we could dress up as a sure. Edwardian
do you
ladies.
Know what? If we can bring bonnets back, that is the funniest fashion. A bonnet.
Listen, you and me in bonnets and corsets.
Done.
AFL. A little bit of AFL. Like, that would be really funny. If we could dress like a suffragettes.
Yeah.
And do an AFL, but our whole team...
Yeah, we're both quite busty. If we had corsets on, that's crazy.
No. I'm not as busty as all that. Not for my body type. I'm not that busty. I mean, it is true that some man had to sew me into my dress tonight.
Yeah,
that's evidence in your corner. But anyway, so it like many things, women were allowed to do it in wartime and then fought to keep doing it. But most recently, you've had some real success. We had Darcy on in Victoria a few years ago, before the pandemic. And she was telling us about the extraordinary success of the first Victorian game, where they were saying, oh, don't expect very many people. And then on the day, there were so many people trying to get in and so many young girls trying to get in. They had to lock the gates and women and girls were climbing over the gates to get in. Illegally, because they were just like, you know, just we have to see this. This is groundbreaking. What's happened here in Queensland?
Well, just to touch on that game, I mean, people literally thought no one was going to come to those games. So they made it free. There's no tickets.
Wow.
Just open the gates, let everybody in. So you can imagine such a successful show like this, 10,000 people out the front if it's free. 25,000 people or something went to that game.
Wow.
So everybody that night, you know, we were training that night ready to fly to Victoria and we finished training and all just sat there so could hear a pin drop that we were going to play in this. This is what we were going to. People are going to come and watch us. I mean, that's sad in a way.
You thought no one would watch.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Not that, you know, everyone knew that their mum and dad was going to come and you'd fill it up with family. But not 20,000 people.
What was that like?
I mean, I couldn't stop crying. I mean, that's 10 years of personal career work in the making, watching that happen. Not, you know, those two teams, but, you know, working in developing sporting opportunities for women. And to see that and so many people like me who were older to the game, never got to play it as a young girl, you know, 40, 50-year-old women who would have chopped their left arm off to play a game of football, that's who went. And they just loved it.
I've got a couple of questions. Like the first one that comes to my mind is how do you go from, so you were a tennis coach and then you played AFL, how do you go from that side to being behind the scenes making big moves, because that's a very, very different sort of path. I mean, and it takes a very different kind of courage and a very different kind of, what's the word, like grit as well? I mean, what was the catalyst that pushed you from one side to the other?
Well, essentially when we started playing, you know, and we found this sport, well, there's a little backstory. So we didn't know that, you know, they didn't have enough people for the team that we joined. And in walk three recruits, like that's like winning gold medal when you're trying to go make a girls team back then, you know. So unbeknownst to us, when they saw these three girls walking in, they're all like, make sure this is the best thing these girls ever do. We need them for the game on the weekend. Make sure you know their names, you know, help them, blah, 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 blah. So by the time we finished this first, the very first training session, we all hopped in the car and we were like, oh, man, that was the best. That's the best. I'm totally doing this. And we'd played every other sport, volleyball, soccer, whatever, but we'd never played something like this. So that was the first big hook. And then you go, oh, but how come we've got, like, the worst change rooms and how come we're in the middle of training and the club turns the lights off because they've forgotten we're training out there?
Oh, my God.
Like, how come? Just, you know, all these things, how the competition was being run, you know, making it really difficult for this competition to grow. So essentially from there, you know, we'd become the team manager the next year, started a new club the following year, was on the board of that, you know, just community club, and then eventually thought, you know what, if you're going to try to beat this thing or make this better for your own personal gain, because I want to play in something that's good, you can't beat them from the outside. You're going to have to beat them from the inside. And so I weaseled my way into working for the AFL and started that way.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The other thing that I wanted to ask you was kind of around age, because I think there's something really interesting about you saying that you were 25 when you started and your sister was 27. In so many sports, that's quite old. That's when people are getting to the end of their career. Like my cousin was a professional soccer player and he retired at 31, you know. And it's very interesting to me because of all of the other things that come with that sort of higher age range, which is established families, established careers and stuff. But it also makes me wonder, because I have a niece who is 7 and they did that like Milo thing, or I don't even know if it was Milo, but I remember when I was young it was Milo, the Milo cricket thing, right? And they'd go out and every single kid would play. Like, it didn't matter because there was none of that sort of gender attachment to it. And so I wonder at what point that changes and why that happens, and if are you still finding that people are joining at a later age, and does that hinder their ability to sort of go more professional?
So let's be clear. When we started, it's very social.
Okay, sorry.
no elite level. Pretty much there was the state team. That was it. That's all you could do. And the biggest problem was we just couldn't get more girls to play. So we needed to start going younger and younger and younger. And so when then I went over to the dark side, and that was one of the first things we did was expand the competition from just an adult-only competition to 18s, 15s, 14s. We have now all-girl competitions starting at 9 years old.
Wow.
Because
and are they well supported? Is there lots of girls wanting to play?
Yeah. So, I mean, just to give you an idea of what we were sort of dealing with when the Milo version of AFL is Auskick.
Sorry, Milo. Do you mean like the chocolate drink?
Yes.
Yeah, was that right?
It's Milo is the sponsor of the cricket.
Okay, so if you're listening internationally, because this is a podcast, Milo is a very Australian chocolate drink.
It's and you chocolate malt.
Yeah, chocolate malt. Mm. Yeah, that's right. It's you put hot milk in it, and it's like cocoa, I guess, but it's...
You don't just put hot milk in it.
Oh, it's like Horlicks.
I've stepped into difficult waters with the feminists of Brisbane. I'm making Milo incorrectly.
Yes, you are.
Sorry, how do you make it?
Well, I think everybody has their own Milo tastes, Deb.
Yeah. All right, so it's a...
My personal way of doing it is I put about 5 massive tablespoons... in the bottom of a cup.
Yeah.
And then I squish it down.
Yeah.
And I put milk up to the top.
Yeah.
And then I like scoop up a little bit of milk. Thank you.
Okay.
My brother puts about the same amount of Milo and mixes the shit out of it until it's like mud. And apparently some people, a teaspoon. Idiot.
So if you're listening, Milo, we would like sponsorship.
Yes. I'm done.
Steph, we'll do a paid partnership. So Milo apparently was sponsoring...
Doesn't have to be paid.
Doesn't have to be paid. She'd just do a partnership.
She takes goods in kind.
Send her loads of Milo, please. Just to be clear, Milo did something with... Milo didn't do a lot of sport when I was growing up. There was always sport. It was like, if you drink Milo, you'll be good at sport. There was some, like, implication.
Wheat, Bix and Milo.
Energy.
Yeah.
Wheat, Bix and Milo, yeah. Always trying to get the kids moving. Yeah.
So our version of that is Auskick.
Right.
And across Queensland, you have about 25,000 kids do Auskick.
Yep.
And about 6,000 of those were girls, which is great. That's like from 4 to 6 years old.
So of the 20,000 doing Auskick, 6,000 were girls.
Yep. It's not bad. This is going back 2013, let's say. But of that 6,000, we were getting 400 going to join a club.
Right.
So we had them all there. We had all these little girls interested, and we had this very equal opportunity program, and everybody can do it. But once you finish, not everybody can do it. Only boys can really do it. Girls can go and be in a boys' team. You might be the only girl in your whole club.
Right.
Really welcoming. Really exciting to be that girl.
This is going to sound a little bit strange, but nothing I say ever does. But I remember when I was in grade 5, so I would have been 10 or 11, I joined our school had inter-school sports, and I really wanted to do league, and I played rugby league, right? And afterwards, because I just loved getting tackled, like I just thought it was so exhilarating. And I remember as I got a bit older, like I was like, I wonder if there's one that'd be a cool one for me to keep fit with. And I truly, like I say this as somebody who's especially started dating women recently, one of the things that I was told was like, nah, you'll turn into a lesbian. It's full of gays. And not that that's so much of an issue these days, but back then the idea of that would be so alienating. Do you find that that's still, is that something that people associate with the sport? Do you think it matters if they associate it with the sport? And do you think that we need to work on not associating that with the sport? Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I 100% know what you mean.
Yeah.
I think, you know, back when we started, so like this, I'm talking like 2005, 100% people, we were, my other two, we were the only straight people in the team.
Yeah.
I mean, that that's changed because it's become more accessible to more girls who probably more, I don't want to say tomboy, but, you know, if you hacked it out with the boys, you're pretty rough and tumble yourself. Mm-hmm. So your average sporting Jane wasn't going to join up to play with boys. So then you ended up with the adult version of that being predominantly gay. It's changed significantly over time as playing football has become more normalised. It's not been about, you know, your sexuality has become more, you know, more normalised than not. Mm. It's because the sport's become more accessible to women. And I think the gay community are a huge reason as to why AFLW is seen to be something that's so inclusive and welcoming of everybody.
Yeah.
In AFLW, where we have a, you know, mandated pride round where we celebrate gay pride, which the men don't have, and it's phenomenal. It is the best fun. It's the best round. You know, everybody's included in it. And that's the environment that is so special about women's AFL.
Mm.
I mean, as I said to you before, we're desperate for every person to play. You know, we're trying to win hearts and minds. No one's getting turned away from that environment.
And we do want to celebrate the origins of, you know, women's sport and, you know, queer women who've worked so hard for it. And we also want all of our children to, you know, if somebody says, oh, you know, if you're playing that sport, that means you're gay or that's it. I mean, I would really, really hope that a teacher in the playground would say, it doesn't, but what if it does? You know, that, like, I would really, really hope that we would celebrate that sport being a queer space, and I would really also hope that we would, you know, disentangle that and say, you know, it is absurd to imply that anybody's sexual orientation is linked to their sporting prowess. But it was a place where queer women felt safe and felt included and felt loved and felt championed, and that needs to be celebrated. That brings us into Kathy, who I really want to include here, because Women of the World is doing something really wonderful in championing all women and bringing all women together. It's such a phenomenon. Can you explain a bit to the audience about Women of the World?
Yeah, sure. It's WOW was a festival created in London, gosh, about 12 years ago now, by the wonderful Jude Kelly, the artistic director of South Bank Centre.
Big fan.
And she thought it was just going to be a weekend event, one of her weekend festivals that a few people might come to. And it was
so similar story to AFL, to the women's AFL. It's like, oh, your mum will come, but, you know.
Absolutely. Let's see who turns up. Anyway, it turned out, they did this weekend festival. It turned out to be, you know, everybody piling out of the doors. Thought, oh, well, maybe we're onto something here. And the difference, what Jude was trying to do at that point was say, and she was of an age where she was thinking, why am I having to do this again? Mm. Why am I having to have this debate again? I've been there. I was that second generation, and why am I having to do it again? So she said, if I'm going to do it again, if I'm going to bring up the gender stuff again, I'm going to do it this time from a point of celebration first. We're going to start with, before we start moaning about what's still going on and what problems that we've got, we're going to start from a point of where we've come from and where we are now. And let's celebrate what we actually have achieved and what our mothers have achieved and what our grandmothers have achieved, which is why we can do what we can do today.
Yes.
So that was the whole point. Plus, it was coming from the perspective of a cultural space. And Jude, being an artist herself, theatre director, stick it in a cultural venue. This is not a women... It's called a festival. It's not a conference.
Yeah.
And
it is so cultural. There are so many storytelling shows. And
that's right. And it's all about storytelling. And that's what it's about. And the beautiful thing about that, if you're talking about change, and this is what I loved about it and why I wanted to, one of the reasons why I wanted to bring it to Australia, was that if you want to create change in the world and massive social change, which many of us do, and gender equality being a major, major part of that, you've actually got to create cultural change first. You've got to get to people's hearts and minds. So what you were talking about, Brianna, you've got to get to people's hearts and minds to understand why there is a need for change. And to do that, the best thing to change culture is to use culture, because it is storytelling. It's our stories, it's our culture, it's our creative aspects of how we explain what it is to be human that actually gets through to people sometimes to make them think, ah, that's why the change is needed. Because if they don't understand why the change is needed, if they don't understand another person's story, they're never going to make the actual policy changes that you want them to make. That is the big, big social changes that we need today.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, when you think about, you know, I'm quite an advocate for Aboriginal people in Australia, and it's what drives me, right? And it's really interesting how it kind of works in that governments are almost, it's almost like they're 10 years behind the social shift that happens. And it's because they need to go like, we'll just make sure that it's okay, it's happening, you know. And I think that that's an important, it's just a sad reality of it, you know. And I don't know what your experiences have been, but for both you and Brianna, I think it'll be one of those things where it'll be 10 years down the track that this is celebrated for what it is and embraced the way that it should be. And what does that feel like from the inside, kind of having to have the patience and keeping up that level of courage and that level of grit? Like, what is it that you tell yourself?
Banging your head against a brick wall trying to change the patriarchy. All the time.
but, you know, this is why I love WOW, because it says, hey, 100 years ago, you know, no women had the vote, and then some women got the vote, and some more women got the vote, and some more, and then legislation started to come in. Yeah. And you know, we are living the hopes of dreams of the wildest dreams of the women who came before us, that they fought for and in cases died for. Mm. And you know, I am sure even more so with Indigenous women. And I feel like, you know, understanding that means it is our job. We can't just go, oh, I'm a bit tired. Like, we have to look at the women, girls, non-binary people who are unborn, you know, or the ones that we know that are running around 4, 5, 6. You know, this next generation are absolutely incredible. If you are, you know, 11-year-old in the front row here going, I was educating a boy at school about what feminism is. This is your alpha generation. Then the Gen Zs are the teens, and they blow my mind.
Absolutely.
They're just, you know, they're down at Washington arguing gun control. Oh, they're school striking about the climate change. They're completely different, and, you know, they are going to save us, but I also slightly worry about leaving it to them. Do you know what I mean? I just think it's like, I just don't remember Martin Luther King saying, I've got a dream, but I'm pretty sure the 5-year-olds are going to figure out how to make it reality. You know, like, it's a good dream, but, like, I'm quite tired. You know, like, say, there's a 10-year-old boy there. You'll get on. We'll crack on with the dream.
Do you know, I think like, what's great about this show and what's great about people like you is the opportunity that you get to give for people to learn about people like Kathy and Brianna. And the reason is because, I mean, we all understand as women in this world, obviously, as feminist women, that the thing is the hardest about operating in any place that is marginalised or minority is that there is so much responsibility. Mm. Because it's responsibility not just to be a good example, but to undo bad examples, to understand bad examples. It requires a lot of empathy, a lot of compassion, a lot of forward thinking. And it just says a lot, like, just the idea that you've been where you are doing what you're doing for 10 years or more, like, just grinding from the inside out.
You know? But it's also the fact you can't take your foot off the pedal in relation to this issue.
Yeah.
Because if you go back in sport, I mean, look, that story about women's soccer in the UK and in the, you know, in the 20s, in the late 20s, nobody knows that women's soccer was bigger than men's soccer in the UK. And because it got bigger than men's, they stopped it.
Yeah. Mm.
And then for decades, it wasn't played.
Tale as old as time. can I ask, how can we help you? What is it that you want? Is it, should we be encouraging our girls to go to AFL practice? How can we help with WOW? Could people, if people wanted to be involved and do a show, can they apply? Is there anything coming up they can buy tickets for?
Absolutely. Well, they can. Can I actually talk about how WOW can help people?
Yes.
We had a person in the audience before.
Yes.
Some sad person who said no to money. Never. Can I also say never say no?
SJ, she's not sad. She was just sort of doing that. She went over to use that microphone. SJ, who's doing that incredible musical.
Well, if you can get wowaustralia.com.au, find my email. Can you just email me about what you're doing?
Come on! Love that.
Because that's what WOW is about. What WOW is about is celebrating what other people are doing 52 weeks of the year. So if there's any way that we can help promote, find money for, just get the word out there,
yes,
then let's... That's the way we can help.
Phenomenal,
you.
Phenomenal.
But we, if somebody said, you know, do you want any money? You just say yes.
Yes, I agree.
Please.
You are so right, Kathy. You are so right. She knows that now. She knows that now. And when Michael was asked, he just went, yes, absolutely. I need money. I need money right now.
Yeah,
give it all to
me. Because
he's
a bloke.
And yeah, absolutely. But she's yeah, but quite. But SJ's young, and she will clearly never make that mistake again because she's never heard the end of it. Brianna, what can we do for you?
I would just say, not just for our sport, but for all women's sport, what we desperately need is for people to show up.
Show up, right. For the games.
Get to the games. We need people through the door because you need to fill stadiums. If we want the best facilities, we need to, they're expensive. You need people to come and fill them, to pay for them.
And they don't advertise the women's games as much, and they don't pay the women properly.
Pay them But our games are cheaper, so there's a trade-off.
But it is...
You can't afford it.
It is as simple as if there's demand, they'll sell tickets. They love people love money, and SJ, and they love money. So if you write to them and go, is there another women's game at my stadium? I really want to see it. We're going to bring all our mates. They'll start putting games on if there is the need for those games, and that's when we'll start to see women's sport really blossom. If you write to the television networks and go, we'd like to see some women's games on the TV.
Can I just make a quick point before we wrap it up?
Hundy P,
great. We were having a quick yarn backstage there, Brianna, about obviously you're an executive in the women's, also I can't believe you call it AFLW and not Waffle, but anyway. waffle, very fun. We were saying that one of the other things is it's not just about having women in the women's sport. I mean, surely it makes sense for women to also exist within the men's sport and have more of a presence across both. That's real gender equity and just kind of going, oh, we're all part of this. Is that a possibility?
100%.
100%.
Hundy P.
Yeah. It's... The biggest shift is, and this is why women's participation at any level of anything is important to knock down male-dominated whatever. So we see that in sport in particular. So I've played sport now. I have a 9-year-old son. Guess what sport he plays? The same sport I played. So if I want to recruit and engage and grow women's involvement, it comes through participation. It comes from experiencing that sport. So I don't have to be the uniform lady and the canteen lady, the traditional spots for women. I can be the president of the club if I want because I know how to play football. I've got some, industry knowledge. All the women at my club are all women we've played football with all together, now all coaching our kids. There's 9 teams and 5 have got female coaches. So now all these boys are growing up seeing women as coaches and teachers and learners, and that's how we're going to change those things again from the inside out.
They'll just see that as totally normal. They're not going to see that as odd.
They'll
just be like, my coach, she's amazing.
Absolutely. My 9-year-old, ask him who his favourite player is. He'll say Courtney Hodder and Harris Andrews. He doesn't say boy or girl. He just says, these are my favourite players. There's a men's team and a women's team. They're my favourite. Because... he doesn't know any different. He's grown up with this since he was 3. And that's more powerful. It's not just the impact on girls, but young boys too.
So wherever you're listening to this, there are clear principles from what both these amazing women are saying that you can use wherever you are. But if you are in Australia, get your girls involved in AFL and see if they like it and take them to a match, because the more that we provide the demand, the more the supply will be there. When's the next WOW Festival on?
Not sure yet. Probably next year sometime.
But sign up for the mailing list and find out, because honestly, it feels like just such a celebration. You're going to really be refueled for the resistance, as I hope you have been tonight here at the Guilty Feminist. If you've never been to the show before, there are 300 episodes of the podcast, which you can listen to. They're totally free. You can listen to them wherever you are, whenever you are. And also, there's a book that I wrote called The Guilty Feminist, which is not free. You could buy that. But there are other shows. If you've got friends in Melbourne, Sydney, Christchurch, or Auckland, Wellington, we're doing shows in all those places over the next week, so please let them know. And if we come back to Brisbane next year, will you come back and see us? It's been a truly wonderful night, and we will close it in the traditional way, but not before we say a huge thank you to Brianna Brock and Kathy Hunt and Steph Tisdale and everybody here at QPAC.
I'm sorry.
And you go.
And you.
Oh, thank you.
I ruined it.
No, not at all. I did. You've been an incredible audience, Brisbane. Listen, we...
Better than Adelaide?
Better than Adelaide. Better than Perth. The finest audience of your generation. Listen, you've been genuinely wonderful. I can't wait to come back again. Thank you so much, Brisbane, for being such an incredible audience. Thanks so much, QPAC. And I am always love to invite back out onto the stage the wonderful Grace Petrie. Oh.
How do you feel about singing along, Brisbane? Yes. So I know that we are not in the northernmost part of Australia, but this is the most northerly date that we are going to do on this tour. That seems like a random fact to tell you, but I'm getting somewhere with it. So this is a song that I wrote about being on tour a lot. It's called Northbound, which doesn't really make sense because I suppose we're southbound after this, but you know what I mean? Allow it. So this has got a line in the chorus where I'm gonna sing a line and you are gonna repeat the line after me. Okay? So the first one is by night and day, like this. By night and day. That's the one. And the next one is by road or rail, goes like this. By road or rail. That's the one. Okay, now listen. This is important. Those two lines, they're not next to each other in the song. All right? I know we did them next to each other then. But in the song, they're not next to each other. Okay? Okay? I know, it's quite tricky, you know, when we get there. You'll see what I mean. There's always someone who's caught out by it, do you know what I mean? So I just like to get in there ahead of time. I've loved it tonight, Brisbane. Thank you so much. I've loved it. Yeah, what a wonderful show. Goodness me. It's called Northbound. M1 again, gone 2 a.m. This lonesome road goes on forever. Espresso shot with a petrol stop, 'cause I will make my way, whatever. The road's so dark and the night's so deep, but I've got promises to keep. And I've got miles upon miles upon miles to go before I sleep. Here we go. By night and day, 5 miles away, I'll get there any godforsaken way. By road or rail, by sea to sail, if there's a way home I won't fail. I'd take my time, steady 70 straight down the line. To King's Cross I will follow, guitar on back, and I'm right on track, always racing with tomorrow. And coast to coast I ride alone, it's just one more ghost on the last train home. I've got miles upon miles upon miles to go all on my own. By night and day, by miles away, I'll get there any godforsaken way. By road or rail, by sea to sail, if there's a way, home I won't fail. I'd take my time, steady sail, straight down the line. Only one thing on my mind, hell or high water, come down. Oh, I'm northbound. To Chicago, halfway to Colorado, and into Minnesota, and down through North Dakota, into Buffalo, New York. I tell you every time we talk that if I could get to you, I'd walk. Listen, you don't have to, but if you wanted to clap, like this. Amazing, keep it up, Brisbane! By night and day, by miles away, I'll get there any godforsaken way. By road or rail, by road or by sea to sail, if there's a way, home I won't fail. Take my time, steady 70 straight down the line. Only one thing on my mind, hell or high water, come down. I'm northbound. Thank you so much. In Brisbane, thank you so much.
You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis White, guest co-host Steph Tisdall, and my very special guests Brianna Brock and Kathy Hunt, with music from Grace Petrie. The Guilty Feminist theme tune was composed by Mark Hodge and produced by Nick Sheldon. The producer for The Spontaneity Shop was Tom Selinsky. Thanks to Bjorn, Jody, and Bone Presents, and everyone at QPAC Brisbane, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com.
I think there's one over there. Kezia? Kezia's got a mic. If you've got a musical, you probably need the mic. Thank you. I don't think anyone with a musical doesn't want the mic. That's what I'm guessing.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.